This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Here are headlines from some of the stories we're following here today at NPR News. Rescue workers have found more victims and a survivor in the rubble that was once the town of Greensburg, Kansas. The death toll from Friday night's devastating tornado now stands at 10. And NASA has announced the discovery of a massive exploding faraway star, the brightest supernova astronomers have ever seen. Scientists say the giant star shines about 5 times brighter than any previously seen supernova. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, a special broadcast from the Bethesda Naval Hospital. U.S. troops injured in Iraq or Afghanistan get more rapid treatment than in any war in history. We'll talk with a corpsman, a nurse, and a combat surgeon back from Iraq about treating the wounded on the front lines. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Stories of heroes are inspiring but easy to understand. Stories of cracked hearts, mixed motives, and excruciating choices are far more complex. Thomas Keneally told one of those stories in his novel Schindler's Ark, which was adapted into the movie Schindler's List. Now he tells another, also set in the Holocaust. It's in a new play called Either Or. We meet Kurt Gerstein, a fascinating idealist who first welcomed Hitler's rise in Germany, recoiled from his atrocities, and then later joined the SS to fight them. Either Or premieres this week at Theater J at the D.C. Jewish Community Center. After many novels, it's Thomas Keneally's first play. If you have questions for the writer about his work or about the challenge of writing a play after so many novels, the number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can send us email, talk@npr.org, and you can also see what other listeners are writing on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Thomas Keneally is with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much.
And how do you feel about being a fledgling playwright at the age of 71?
Yes, it was when I turned 70, I thought I'd better make an honest man of myself.
Stop all this stuff and go to the stage.
That's right. And Ari Roth at Theatre J, who is himself a playwright, said if I could endure, he could get this play in shape. Mm-hmm. So we made a compact with each other that I would be re-enter the school of the theatre and learn it as well as I could, and that I'd basically keep rewriting till we opened. Now we're open, and it's up to the public response.
The story, though, tell us a little bit about that. Did you want initially to tell this story, and we're looking for a way to tell it?
Yes. When I was writing my only famous novel, Schindler's List, years ago, I came across the story of this man who was an evangelical Christian. He had joined the SS deliberately after his sister-in-law had been gassed in an asylum. Mm-hmm. As happened early in the war, gassings with carbon monoxide. And then he became, because of his engineering, he was a sanitation expert, and he was involved in ordering the chemical, which became the chemical of preferred use in the gas chambers.
The infamous Zyklon B.
The Zyklon B, a form of hydrocyanic acid. And no sooner did he realize at Belzec in 1942 in Poland, mm-hmm, that people were being gassed than he began whistleblowing. He did not stand still and say, I'm appalled, I won't order Zyklon B anymore, you can shoot me. He did something which is perhaps dramatically more interesting. He voted for Zyklon B, or at least he does in the play, yes, and he immediately began whistleblowing. And it was the lack of response to his whistleblowing which increasingly unhinged him as the war went on.
Yes, there's a scene where he approaches the papal nunciate, the diplomat from the Vatican, and tells him what's going on, and the man refuses to listen. And this is a story that's been told in other contexts, sort of in the middle of your play.
Yes, that's right. If he'd gone to another papal nuncio in another country, he might have fared better. But this particular one, Archbishop Anerigo, liked Hitler, saw him as a bastion against atheistic communism, and also didn't want to rock the relationships between the Catholic Church and the Nazi regime, which was, you know, not so keen on individual conscience and religious conscience. Mm-hmm. And so he ignored him. But in that scene where Kurt speaks to the nuncio in 1942, as he did, and was dismissed from the nunciature, and the Vatican wasn't informed by Kurt, even though he tried, I think of a similar scene that I write about in Schindler's List. It's not in the film, but in the winter of 42-43, Schindler went to Hungary, which was not yet occupied by the Nazis, and he broke the news of gassings at Belzec and elsewhere to Jews who were involved in the rescue organization. And they found it hard to believe. Yes. When they first heard the news. So it's hard. One of the challenges of the play is to write it from the point of view of people who haven't read all the books on the Holocaust, who don't necessarily know it's going to happen, and to whom their first encounter is one of shock.
Yes, because, of course, one of the greatest shocks of the Holocaust is how this could possibly, death on an industrial scale, how it could possibly happen in such a civilized, cultured nation as Germany, and that seems to be the subject of your play.
Yes, and it resonates for me because I'm an Australian, and the Australians, even more than the Americans, are looked upon as the trailer trash of European immigration. And we would not, maybe because we're not efficient enough, we could not run a genocide like this. And it shocks me. It shocked me when I was a kid, and it shocked me when I was a Catholic seminarian, and it shocks me as a now 71-year-old grandfather that my betters, my cultural betters, the guys who could play Mozart and read Schiller and Heine, that they would do this. And, of course, the fascination in my case was reinforced that by the fact that my father was in the North African campaigns and used to, because the Australians were in the war from 1939, he used to send home to me Nazi memorabilia. And I used to, I mean, it was cool stuff to have, a mm-hmm. Luger pistol holster and so on. But I used to look at this material and think in a childlike way, who are these people? What are they about? And I'd try to work it out from the Hollywood movies that we saw every Saturday afternoon. Who are these people? Why are they basically so mean? And that's always fascinated me.
Our guest is Thomas Connelly. Schindler's List, of course, is most famous. He has a new play opening here in Washington, D.C. called Either Or. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You say you write from the vantage point of an Australian. You also write from the vantage point of being an Irishman. And the Irish, of course, victims of a genocide perhaps of a different sort, a slow-motion genocide of indifference rather than industrialism.
Yes, it was one of those countries in which the land system in the 19th century and earlier was so appalling that its population was reduced by famine, was more than cut in two by famine. And it's the only country in Europe that has diminished so catastrophically in population since 1846, when in August 1846 the famine, potato blight struck. Mm. And that's always interested me from the point of view of those of my wife's and my forebears who were convicts sent to Australia, selected, as we'd like to say, by the best judges in the British Isles. Mm. But maybe my convict forebears imbued me with an obsession with prisoners and also an obsession with ethnic hysteria.
Hmm. Here's an email question we have from Jeff in Tucson, Arizona. I'm wondering if the title of the new play, which is Either Or, is at all in reference to the Kierkegaard work of the same name.
Yes, I was aware that Kierkegaard used... I would like to claim such a distinguished pedigree, but not... It derives more from the fact that we know a great deal about Gerstein. He's mm-hmm. one of the righteous Gentiles for his whistleblowing. At the end of the war, he was found in his cell hanged in a French prison, Cherche Midi in Paris. And we don't know either that he hanged himself or that fellow SS men hanged him for being a betrayer. We don't know to what extent he was a criminal or considered himself a criminal and to what extent...
Because though he tried to sabotage this process, he was also complicit in it. Some of that Zyklon B was used to kill Jews.
Exactly, and he would try to bury it. He did his best to condemn shipments and bury it, but he could never bury enough. And he didn't stand up and say, as a martyr would, I'm not going to do this. I'm a great admirer of the philosopher Henri Bergson, the Parisian philosopher who became a Catholic. He was Jewish by birth. And the Nazis were keen to let him off for his distinction. But he himself joined the lines, the queues of the condemned. Kurt Gerstein wasn't able to do that. Mm. But he did try to be within the SS to whistleblow on them. And indeed, his case is the case, the most notorious case of an SS whistleblower. And there aren't really any
them,
others,
yes.
Because there were some that committed suicided or committed overt treachery against Hitler, but they were few in number. His is the only whistleblowing archive that comes from an SS man.
Our guest is novelist Thomas Keneally. His new play is called Either Or, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some callers on the line. This is Daniel. Daniel with us from San Francisco.
How are you, Mr. Keneally?
Thank you very much, Daniel.
It's a great pleasure to talk to you. I've been a reader of yours for years and years, and in fact, when I bought the book, it was called Schindler's Ark, and it's the one I always refer to it as Schindler's Ark and rather sneer at the other title, I'm afraid.
Yes.
Because it was an ark, wasn't it?
Hmm.
It was. There was a compact, a sort of covenant between Schindler and his people, and it was a rough covenant, but it was a definite covenant. When Spielberg told me in 1992, a long time ago now, that he was going to make the film, I asked him, would he change it back to back to Ark? And he said, no, I won't, because I'm going to use lists as visuals in the films.
Yeah.
In the film. And he did that. I never thought List was a preferential name to Ark. It was just that Simon and Schuster told me that American Jewry would be offended by the implied passivity of the title Ark, and not wanting to offend American Jewry or any other group, I agreed with it. I've never met a Jewish reader since who didn't think that their insistence on that was crazy. But
we are. Well, you know, it's funny. My father started his career as a senior diplomat, as Ireland's ambassador in Australia. You may have met him, Frank Coffey.
Oh, yes, and I did meet him.
And he's gone, I'm afraid. But he ended as Irish ambassador in the Vatican.
Uh-huh.
And I can tell you, he was always of the view, and my mother's maiden name is Wahlberg, if you can believe that. And what's extraordinary, I always used to rag him about this, and he passed me, just before he died, a marvelous book he had got while he was in Rome, in English. God knows who had, you know, left it in the second-hand bookshop. And it was called The Vatican and the Jury, 1938 to 1941. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a fabulous book.
Yes.
And it documents all kinds of information that was going back and forth. It was written by an administrator in the Curia.
Hmm.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel, thanks very much for the call.
Not at all.
And let's see if we get Jody on the line. And Jody's with us from Sacramento in California.
Hi, Mr. Keneally. It's a pleasure to be able to speak to you.
That's very kind, Jody.
I am an admirer of your body of work, and I love every book you've ever written, especially the books about early Australia.
Oh, that's good. Not all Americans are as keen on those, so I hope, Jody, to the limits of your capacity, you will spread the word.
Well, that's why I wanted to mention this. So everybody could hear it. You know, they're great books, and the one in particular about the settlements, and they produced a play.
Oh yes.
It's been several years, and I can't remember the title.
It's called the
that one is a really fun ride, and your wonderful story.
And what's it called?
It's called The Playmaker, and it concerns the first play ever performed in Sydney, and it was performed by the detritus of Europe's prisons by young convicts who felt compelled in the great vacancy of Australia to reproduce the European phenomenon of the theater.
Jody, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We should mention that Thomas Keneally's latest book, The Widow and Her Hero, was published in March. His new play, Either Or, is premiering this week at Theater J here in Washington, D.C. Thomas Keneally, good luck with it.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thomas Keneally with us here in Studio 3A. Tomorrow, we broadcast from the Bethesda Medical Center with a look at the advancements of military medicine on the front lines. Join us for that. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.